Anybody like crime dramas, murder mysteries, whodunits? Anything? A bunch of you. I love whodunits, and a lot of them are murder mysteries. And who's the first person they always suspect? The spouse, right? And that's true. That's true in the fiction, and it's true in real life, right? Because, you know, you always hurt the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all, right? It's true. It's because so many crimes are crimes of passion. Because if we really don't care, we can just walk away from it. Right? If my neighbor six blocks away paints the house a color I don't like, what is it to me? I don't care. But in my own family, now, if I'm going to get all hot and bothered about paint colors, well, then there's probably stuff underneath, and we'll get into that. And that's true in a church as well. So I'm going to tell you that the most useful class, one of the most useful classes I took in seminary, you might think that seminary is all sitting there and having super erudite conversations about theologians and you know, biblical languages, and I did take 4 years of biblical Hebrew and discussing sacred texts and all this stuff. And there's some, but one of the most useful classes I took in seminary was a class in conflict resolution. Now I'm going to tell you, and why would this be important? I'm going to tell you that it was taught by a guy who was both a psychologist and a minister, and his theology was not only not mine, but almost oppositional to mine. Like I almost found his theology offensive. And yet, he taught me so much. Well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, do we have to be perfectly aligned with each other in every single thing in order to get on in the world and in order to learn with each other? My theology may not, probably does not align with many of yours. I would hope that you don't find my theology offensive. I certainly don't find any of your theologies offensive that I know of. But, you know, and I'll tell you that what made his theology offensive to me was that it was exclusive theology. He believed that his was the only way. That was what was offensive. And yet, he was a brilliant professor. So, but I don't want to get off on a theological conversation here. And yet, I found this class in conflict resolution so useful, and he did a lot of consulting with churches of all denominations, and he'd go in and help them with things. And usually when a church calls in a consultant, it's not because they're having a little tiny problem and want to learn how to do it better, right? It's because they... So he told us of the church somewhere in, I don't know, it might have been Texas, where they called him in because the deacons had actually been plotting to murder the minister. That's not a good conflict resolution tactic, right? So we're gonna talk about, is there anybody here who would like to live an absolutely conflict-free life? Some of you would, okay. I have to tell you, I wouldn't like to live a conflict-free life. Because I think that would be really boring. It would be really boring. Life is made up of conflicts. Every time we have to make a choice, that's a conflict of sorts. There are conflicts that are good. Should I have the oatmeal or the cream of wheat? That is a conflict. It's not a life-changing, massive conflict, unless I'm allergic to wheat, but you know, that's not a huge thing, but it is a type of conflict, right? Choices are our conflict. Should I choose this life path or this other career path? That's a conflict, right? So I'm not looking to live a conflict-free life, but is there anybody here who might like to figure out how to manage conflict a little better? A few more of you. Anybody here ever mess up once in a while? Anybody here can look back on a time and you think, I didn't handle that well, yeah. So, you know, we all have our go-to conflict resolution styles. And I have a slide, and now's your moment. Okay. Now, if you read your Crossroads, this might look familiar to you. Anybody seen this before? Those who are nodding, I know you read your Crossroads, because I put this in there. This is my cat is wondering where this is right now. This is my cat. You can chase this on the wall after the service. Okay. So people who teach conflict resolution and who study conflict resolution, this is a familiar chart. And I hear people say a lot of times, we should be able to compromise. Oh, no. Compromise, I think people use that when they might mean collaborate, but compromising is the last resort of conflict resolution. It's a lose-lose situation, and it's what we do when we really can't do anything else. So this says cooperative here. There's cooperative and uncooperative, and there's assertive and passive, and everything is on the scale of assertiveness and passiveness and cooperative and uncooperative. And we have competing, avoiding, accommodating, and collaborating, and there in the middle is compromising, and we're just going to leave this up. Now maybe, and there are tools we can use to determine what our style is, and in different scenarios, sometimes they might all be the best style. And we can learn how to be better at all of these things, and we can learn when it's appropriate to get into it with one another, and how to get into it with one another, which isn't always with fists, but sometimes with open arms. And we can learn when it's appropriate to walk away, to avoid. Now, you don't have to tell me, but do some of you know that your preferred style is just to avoid conflict altogether? Some of you know that. And when we avoid conflict, I mean, sometimes that's smart to do, right? If you see a fight going on, and you're one person and there's like a huge melee, maybe the best thing to do is to not get into the middle of that. That might be a good time to avoid conflict, right? You don't know these people. You don't know what it's about. Why stick yourself in the middle of it? There are times to avoid conflict. But sometimes we pretend that if I just ignore it, it will go away. Does it ever really go away? No. No. That's what happens when we're passive and uncooperative. I'm not going to tell you it never is a thing, but a lot of the times, you know, when it's in our own space, it's probably not usually the best thing to do. Now, sometimes we compete. Is competition ever a good thing? Yeah. Yeah. Some of you might work for government contractors or might be government contractors. Any of you ever shopped for a mortgage or, you know, bought a car? Anybody here ever bought a car? I mean, there's competition there, right? You're looking for the best price. We're looking for, right? There's competing involved. And sometimes even in our own conflicts, there might be some win-lose situations, goes in tight, and that's all right, right? That's all right. Anybody play a board game? Anybody ever play Monopoly? Or, you know, there's going to be a winner and a loser, and sometimes we practice that, and that's okay. When we know we're doing it in the spirit of fun, in the spirit of just, you know, hey, I'm going to race you. Let's see who's fastest. That's okay. Our fifth principle is the use of the democratic process. When we have votes, congregational votes, you know, we hear all sides and then there's a vote, and we might be on the winning side or the side that gets voted down. We've heard all things, but that's a, you know, in many ways that's a win and lose sometimes when we take a vote. With a lot of people, sometimes it has to go that way. That's okay, as long as we've heard everybody out. Now, accommodating. Sometimes we can be too accommodating, right? We just roll over all the time. Oh, whatever you want. Whatever you want. Whatever you want. But then sometimes we can become martyrs to that. Anybody know any martyrs ever? Maybe you have some in your family. You know, the person who accommodates all the time but then complains about it. So we have to be careful of that. Sometimes it's appropriate to accommodate. Sometimes it's entirely appropriate. If I don't really care that much about where we're going to dinner tonight or what color we paint this room or that room, why do I need to, oh, and you have a strong feeling about it? Well, we'll do what you want to do. That's fine. But one of the hardest things to do is to be collaborative, to collaborate. Because a collaborating style that's being, I have to press the right button. That's being highly assertive and highly cooperative. That means we sit together and figure it all out and come to a solution that's win-win, that we all like. It's not compromise. We don't all give something up. It's a solution that we all like. I want to go to the opera. And you want to go to the football game. Okay, well, football is not my favorite sport. And you don't like opera. Okay, well, let's think of something we both really like. Well, you like jazz. Okay, I like jazz. I like baseball, but it's football season. It's not baseball season yet. Okay, well, that's out. Do you like skiing? I like skiing. Okay, we could go skiing. We could go skiing during the day and go to the jazz concert at night. Hey, now that's a collaboration, right? It's something different, but that's a collaboration. Now, you notice I haven't talked about church yet or any church things, but we can do that in church, too. We can do that in church, too. I want to paint the sanctuary in green and purple stripes. I think it ought to be a neutral color. I think it ought to be light pink. Well, okay, let's compromise and make it green and pink stripe. No. I bet we can collaborate. On a small team can, the whole congregation probably can't do this, but a small team can probably say, okay, let's think about this. We're probably going to want it some kind of neutral color, and here's why. And so let's look at some palettes, and can we agree that it won't be stripes, and here's why? Yeah, okay, I can see your point. It probably shouldn't be stripes, so here's why. And we can come up with a color palette. And maybe we come up with cream or beige. But how do we get to the point where we can sit down and do that? How do we do that not like this, but like this? Well, there are skills involved. One is that we have to listen to each other. We have to have good communication skills. Some people call these nonviolent communication skills. Has anybody heard of nonviolent communication? So we have to be able to really hear each other, which means that when we're speaking with each other, we're not constantly ready, right there, all the time, with the next thing I want to say, but we're taking the time to hear and appreciating the silence. That we use I messages. Not, you did this to me. You made me feel. Nobody makes me feel. I take ownership for my feelings. I may have felt when that happened, when you did this thing, but I own the feelings, right? Now, I messages aren't just putting I in the front of a sentence. I think you're a jerk is not an I message. I was really hurt and felt threatened when you were shouting is an I message. Shouting is objective. We can say, right? That's not a subjective thing. Shouting is a thing. But using I messages, owning our own things, and just speaking for ourselves, not speaking for everybody else, that's an important thing. And assuming good intentions can go a long way as well. And I know I've mentioned this before. Have you ever been slighted or felt slighted by someone or felt, and just, that was on purpose. I can't believe Reverend Madeline didn't remember my name. I can't believe she did that thing that she did. I can't believe. Now, maybe Reverend Madeline, because you know she's a pretty rotten person, did that thing on purpose. It's possible. But I find that when I assume good intentions in others, it makes me feel so much better. I don't spend a lot of time getting all worked up about how I was wronged. And when we're in that space, it's so much easier to sit down and talk with someone else. Because how are we going to get to this place of collaborating, if we can't sit down and talk with each other and hear what each other is saying? Now, I'm not going to tell you that compromise is never a thing. You know, in really large bodies, it's really important. In politics, compromise is really important. When we're so far apart that we know we're never going to agree, everybody has to give up a little something, and compromise is important. It's there, and it's a tool, but it shouldn't be our go-to thing. But if we can sit down with each other and hear each other and assume good intentions and use I messages, and remember that especially in church. Next week, we're going to talk about being out in the community and engaging conflict in the world. But when we're together in a religious community, when we can remember that we are covenanted together, that we are bound together, that we are doing holy work together, how much can we accomplish? How far can we go? How much can we resolve together if first we hear each other and are willing to do the work? It takes a lot of energy. We have to assert ourselves. We have to speak up for ourselves, and we have to cooperate. Do you have that energy? Oh, I'm going to try that again. Do you have that energy? I think you do. Can you lend that strength to each other? Okay. Can we collaborate together to build a better church community, to build a better brew? All right. Well then, namaste.